gorgeous listeners, welcome back to Throne Shade. Happy to have you here for a bit. Alan, how are you, my dear?
Baruch Hashem.
Yay, excellent. So for this episode, I understand we're going to go back a little bit and get another tidbit from that cool story about Ashmedai and King Solomon.
Right.
And get another perspective on how things unfurl there.
Yeah, so I was thinking we're coming to the end, sort of our little series on the shapes of the Shadim, mm-hmm. right? The different forms that they take and can take and all that. Mm-hmm. It's been actually kind of a big series, but...
Yeah.
The story where Ashmedai takes the form of Shlomo HaMelech, King mm-hmm. Solomon, there's some interesting commentaries that ask questions based on what we've already learned. So I figured it's a nice little summary of what we've learned.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's dive in.
Sure. So there is a responsa commentary from a rabbi who's the sefer is called Ezras Meitzar.
Mm-hmm.
And full disclosure, I had not heard of this.
Ooh.
So I had to look him up.
New rabbi alert.
The Rav Pinto, who lived in Sarajevo in the late 18th century.
Pinto from Sarajevo. Noted.
Yeah. And so the story, if you recall, mm-hmm. has Ashmedai sending Shlomo HaMelech far, far away.
Right. Like literally throwing him or something. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Ouch. Yes.
Yes. Uh-huh. And while Shlomo HaMelech is busy making his way back to Yerushalayim.
Meanwhile,
Ashmedai has taken Shlomo HaMelech's form
mm-hmm.
and his
except
place.
Except the feet.
Except for his feet. That's how he ultimately gets discovered. Correct.
Right.
And it's an interesting and important detail that it's the women who are married to Shlomo HaMelech who ultimately find out or are involved, I should say, in that discovery.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be important detail in a moment.
Uh-huh.
But
is there like a royal pedicure situation where they're like, this is unusual? I think that's exactly how it went down.
Well, they asked to check, right? They asked.
Oh, because they're like, you're maybe not Shlomo, you're maybe a demon.
Right. So mm-hmm. something was making them suspicious. But
yes.
The Ezras Meitzar asks other questions. Because we know that there are other ways to tell if somebody or something is a shade
mm-hmm.
Besides just looking at their feet, although that would be the giveaway is the feet.
Yes.
But one example he gives is Bavua de Bavua, which is what it says in the Masechtas Gittin, the tractate on...
Tractate Gittin, which is... Gittin is plural for get, which is a Jewish writ of divorce.
Right.
So it's a whole section of the Talmud.
Right, and there's...
Sort of on that, uh-huh.
Right, and there's Shadim spoken about quite at length in that particular tractate.
Mm.
It's important. So the idea of... I think we did talk about this, but I'll just mention in brief, Bavua de Bavua is that this idea that humans' shadows have themselves the ability to cast shadows.
Yeah, we've talked about this before, right.
Right. But Shadim, their shadows do not have that ability to cast shadows.
Oh, right.
Right.
Great.
So they could have tested Ashmedai that way.
Mm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Looked and see. Does his shadow cast a shadow?
Yes.
Yes.
There's certainly an app for that. Okay.
Right. But says the Ezras Meitzar that since women aren't necessarily experts in that area, they didn't do that.
Oh,
yeah.
Are we not experts in that?
Right.
Interesting. I learned something new about myself. Okay.
So the Ezras Meitzar continues. Similarly, they could have tested him by his voice.
Hmm.
Because, says the Ezras Meitzar, a shade cannot change their voice. They can change their physical form.
Hmm.
But their voice, they can't imitate accurately the person whose body that shapeshifted into.
Do we know what Ashmedai sounded like then? Did he sound like Siri or something? Or like Hal? Or what did he sound like?
Well, another commentator...
I don't know why that's where I went.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, we'll unpack that later.
Another commentator who I believe we've also mentioned before on this podcast, the Chida.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
he was another late 18th century, but this time in Yerushalayim, in Jerusalem, from Jerusalem, I should say. He has sort of like that a shade can kind of imitate, but only sort of like partially kind of. It would have been especially difficult for Ashmedai to imitate Shlomo HaMelech's voice, apparently, according to the Chida. But
I picture Shlomo HaMelech sounding a little bit like Michael Bublé. What do you think he sounded like?
This is another one of those situations I don't really know how to respond to.
The most romantic book of the Bible written by this guy is totally going to be Michael
Bublé. I mean, he also wrote Koheles and, you know, like...
Okay, fine.
All right.
My dreams.
I don't know.
Sounded like John Legend.
Okay. Who knows? Uh-huh. Anyway, I don't know is the answer. I don't know what Shlomo HaMelech sounded like. So there are two possibilities. According to the Chida, one is that Ashmedai, being the king of Shadim, had a little bit extra power in that realm and was actually able to imitate Shlomo HaMelech's voice accurately.
Oh, yeah.
The other possibility is that the wives of Shlomo HaMelech weren't really all that used to speaking with Shlomo HaMelech. And so they wouldn't have been able to discern what his voice would have sounded like.
Wow. okay. Well, tradition holds, right, that Shlomo had, there were like a lot of these women.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
So even just dividing up the day, like 1,000 wives or something like that, right, is sort of the ballpark number.
Okay.
Because why wouldn't the wisest person on earth get married to 1,000
women? Well, it was a problem, but anyway.
Okay. So I sort of buy that as maybe not being underhanded about the women, but just like, you know, fact of life, you don't get that much time with your hubby. Okay. You might not remember what he sounds like because you haven't seen him for a year and 3 months or whatever the rotation was.
Okay, that's very generous of you.
I'll go with that. We'll go with that.
But says the Chida that there's an unanswered question, which is why didn't they check Ashmedai for his hair? Because you remember...
The hair thing is coming up again.
Right, remember, male Shadim do not have hair.
Okay.
So... there is a missing part of the book, of the Chida's book, and it says here v'chaval al d'avdin. It's chaval. It's like a shame that it was lost.
Wait, what? That question comes up, and then the answer that we don't know. We don't have an answer. Just like it's missing from the book.
We don't.
It got shaved out of the book. You see what I did there?
We don't know why they didn't bother to check for his hair. But maybe they were going... this is me talking. I don't know. Maybe they were going to, but then they like, oh, the feet. I figured it out, you know. If Ashmedai had figured out a way to fool them with his feet, they would have checked for his hair. I don't know. But like...
right. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's an interesting discussion in itself because it feels like if the feet thing is so... sort of universally accepted as the gold standard, as it were, as to whether this entity is a shade or not. Even like kind of going down that line of questioning and saying, well, why didn't they do these other more obscure, technically difficult things? It feels a little odd, but it's just sort of exploratory, right? It's just, you know, opening up the question.
Yes, definitely that it's exploratory, but I certainly don't think the hair thing is so out there. Because remember, we also, in the previous episodes, we also talked about, you know, the whole thing with Boaz and Ruth, right?
Right, right.
And that was obvious to Boaz, with the hair.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Right, yeah. Slightly different thing going on there. But, okay, really interesting. Thanks a lot, Alan.
Sure.
Okay, Alan, I understand you've got another story for us.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah, just one little last little bit about how to tell if you're speaking or dealing with a shade in the world.
See, super practical information.
I try to be helpful.
Yes, this is enormously useful. Okay, tell us more.
Yeah, so there's a story. It comes from a sefer called Eitzar HaMidrashim, which is a collection of midrashim.
Mm-hmm. That's literally what it means, collection of, or treasury of sort of extra biblical fan fiction.
If you want to call it that.
There you go.
But this
the
particular one is...
The equivalent is all I'm saying. Okay, go ahead.
Got it, right. Yeah. There's a particular story with that of a sheda, a female shade, who steals a human infant and claims it as her own.
Boo.
And then she and the original mother are brought to trial before a judge whose name is given actually as being Buddha, interestingly enough.
All right.
And this judge rules exactly as Shlomo HaMelech did in a famous judgment trial.
Indeed.
Involving two mothers.
Perhaps proposing that the child be cut in half.
Yeah, similarly, right?
Okay.
And the real mother, who is afraid for the fate of her actual child, gives up and says, no, she can take it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So
just
the
don't
judge.
Harm the baby. Just yeah. don't,
right. So the judge says, this is Buddha, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
He rules, okay, so that's the real mother. And then he approaches the Sheda, the female shade.
Ooh, it's going down.
And he says, right. And he says, I knew that you were a Sheda. Because your eyes are red, like some kind of seed.
Okay, that is probably also red.
Probably,
yes.
Yes.
Okay.
And there is no brightness to them.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Dull, creepy red eyes.
Yep.
That sounds...
So, that's the only instance that we find of that tell. This is, you know, but like, you know, if you do see, you know, I don't know.
Right.
Yeah, so...
That's really interesting. And also, I have to mention, like, a particularly disturbing and terrible story right now at this moment in time. But of, like, a child being taken away from its family.
Mm.
But that's a... and it's interesting that the judge would just sort of casually mention afterwards that he knew that this character was a Sheda by her eyes. But had to go through the court proceedings and mimic what King Solomon had done in order to kind of complete the trial.
Right. No, for sure. I mean, he could have known by her feet, for example. He could have known by Bavud the Bavua. He could have known by other things, but...
Right. Well, I'm also saying as a matter of justice... that he didn't look at the Sheda and say, that's a human baby.
Oh, right.
You are a shade. It's obviously not yours.
He still went through the
and
trial
instead
process.
Went through the trial.
Absolutely.
And then came up afterwards, which I just think is fascinating, right? To not say from the very beginning, like, this is obviously the human mother.
Mm-hmm.
But rather to, like, go through the quote-unquote proper kind of court proceedings.
Sure, because justice is due to all creatures. We've seen this, including Shaden.
Yeah.
We've seen in previous episodes, there was a whole trial brought from another shade. Remember the shofar? We were talking about one of the shofar episodes, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's if I remember correctly. But yeah.
Yeah.
It's not the first time that you know, you still have to go through the trial.
Right.
And afterwards...
The process matters.
And afterwards...
Hmm.
You know, to say
that's when you really sink in and just say, I knew just looking at you.
Well, exactly. I knew just looking at your eyes, not your legs, not your hair. I knew.
Right. That's interesting. I mean, and like dull red.
Your shadow
eyes is like a very creepy image anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And there is. I mean, even in Judaism, we have some of that sort of eyes of the whole. Gateway to the soul kind of idea, right? Isn't there something about that at some
probably
point, somewhere? Probably. We'll go with probably. I just assume you'd have something to
I know
there's
like the forehead
the forehead
yeah
Okay. You want to say more?
No.
No? Say more, Alan.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, yes.
Your forehead is a window to the soul?
Correct. Yeah, we've seen...
Like a tefillin thing?
No, not the Malcolm tefillin. It's the forehead, you know.
Like I understand what a forehead is, but where does that come from?
You can't
from?
See, but I'm gesturing on my
You're
forehead.
You're gesturing wildly, and no one can see you right now except me, and it's highly amusing. So yeah. Wait, okay. All right, fine. I just got the cut it off, Miriam, signal.
Suffice it to say that there are many stories involving, you know, divinely attuned rabbis who are able to tell people's entire lives, their futures, their pasts, their loved ones, everything about them by looking at their foreheads, not their eyes.
Huh.
Maybe there's a thing about eyes, too. I just, yeah, but.
Huh. That's so interesting.
Yeah.
I would like to know more about that. Listeners, if you folks know anything about that, please let us know. Because I honestly don't pay all that much attention to other people's foreheads. But maybe now. See? Practical tips.
Right.
All right. Thanks, Alan. All right, Shade Throwers, we had a whole collection of really interesting, cool questions from our listener, Shayna. So thank you, Shayna, for sending these questions in. In the context of this episode, we're going to tackle one of those questions. And here it is. A few times you've touched on the offspring of Shadim/humans and mentioned early on that one of the male offspring had a bris, had a circumcision. I think the child's mother was human, which a later episode said the children of the same gender as the demonic parent would be demons and the other gender would be human. So shouldn't this child be a shade? How can you circumcise a shade? Actually, I'd just like to know more about shade/human children in general, smiley face. So, all right. First of all, thank you, Shayna, for sending in that question and your other thoughtful, interesting questions. Alan, what do you think? Let's talk about shade human babies.
Yeah. Okay. So first of all, thank you very much, Shayna, for that question. It's an excellent question, and you may be comforted to know you're not the first to ask it. Second of all, I take issue with your opening, Miriam. This is not one question. This is a whole bunch.
Fine.
A whole bunch of questions.
So many questions.
So many, in fact, that I would like to dedicate another series. Now that we're finished with one, I want to go and start thinking about the next ones.
Mm.
There, we can do a whole series on just that topic, honestly. But
on shade human offspring?
Yeah.
Oh.
And shade human sexual relations.
Vote with your tweets,
as well, and
people. Tell us what you want us to talk about.
Right next. Yeah. That's one option. There's other
stuff.
See what
I did there? Vote with your tweet.
Sorry,
go ahead. Someday. Just kidding. That would be terrible. Okay, so yes. So how would you like to, what are we going to do with this particular question at this particular time?
Okay, so I guess I'll start with the question of shouldn't this child be a shade?
Right. Okay, so if it's a boy baby and the father
is
was
a shade,
then it follows according to a certain teaching that the baby is
also a shade.
Also a shade.
Right.
But this baby was human. So what's the deal?
It's not a hard and fast rule. There's other opinions.
That's such a cop out.
It's a question.
And such a frequent thing.
Because we know other stories. This anecdote that we gave is not the only one of its kind. There are many. There's stuff in Sefer Hasidim. There's stuff the Divrei Yisrael brings stuff. The Machne Chaim asks questions like this. Rishis Rabbah, when it talks about Adam and Chava, which we also covered in a previous episode, and Adam and Eve,
yeah.
You know, is separated from Chava for 130 years, and what happens to the offspring
in that time.
Mm-hmm. According to Rishis Rabbah, Chava is also giving birth to Shadim, and then there's Lilith in there too. So it's not so clear.
Right.
Which, you know, I guess was one point I was trying to make with other subsequent episodes. I guess that wasn't so clear that I was trying to make that point, that it's not so clear. It's late.
Perfectly crystal clear now that it's not clear. Well, and
right,
also I feel like there's a multitude of people from across time and across all kinds of different, you know, sort of cultural traditions coming in and offering their two cents on this world of the Shadim. And it's in some way there's other aspects of halakha and Jewish life and law that are pulled together a little bit more cohesively. And this is, I mean, this world of Jewish demons isn't necessarily given that same treatment.
It's a good question. It's sort of hard because you can, and you should try to give it the same treatment. In fact, I'm looking at a piece right now that is basically from the Sefer Hasidim, where it answers the question though in a very halachic way, which is, it seems like there is a disparity between, you know, among a bunch of these different stories and different midrashim and different understandings.
But actually, there is no disparity.
Correct.
With the thumb movement and all the stuff.
Right. Which means you have to try to find the. It's our duty to try and find out what's really going on here.
Yes.
That said, we have to approach it, like I just said a moment ago, with this perspective that it isn't necessarily so clear right now.
Sure.
At least not to me. I'll give that caveat.
Right.
In the case that the child is a human,
okay,
which the implication that it is, it wouldn't. What I'm trying to say is that it's not impossible that it would be a human child and therefore have a real kosher bris.
Okay.
That said, if it was a shade, it could, as we just learned, take the form of a human infant. And the implication there is that, you know, its feet may be chicken feet.
Yeah.
But its other little, body parts would be...
little terrifying red eyes.
Or whatever, right.
Or whatever it might be.
Right. It could still be kosher for bris.
Wow.
There's that. I don't know the answer. I don't have the story in front of me. And if I did, I don't believe it has that detail in it.
Okay.
But that's one thing to consider. Okay. And then the last part of the question about talking about human shading hybrids or whatever, relationships and all of that. I believe we can talk about that more in future episodes.
Yeah, we'll dig into that deeper because I think that's really
interesting. We also touched on it with the Esther episode.
Yes, we talked a little bit about it in terms of Esther and the relationship there. And
dynasty and stuff.
And the whole dynasty.
So it's fascinating.
It is. It's really interesting stuff. Shayna, I hope that was helpful. We'll try and get to your other questions in later episodes. And other gorgeous listeners, please feel free to tweet at us and send in your questions and send in your suggestions and things you'd like us to touch on the pod. And we will take those under advisement and decide what we want to do. But we always appreciate listener questions. Thank you so much for sending this one in, and we'll tackle some more in later episodes. Shade throwers, we are just about at the end of our time. Alan, you got a quick action item for us?
Sure. I don't know if it's an action item so much as a bracha for our listeners.
I like that.
And for us. You mentioned earlier on in this episode about practicality, right? Mm-hmm. And how these... you look skeptical. all these...
Never been a fan of practicality. But yeah, go ahead.
All these different, advices, pieces of advice for us to be able to tell what's a shade and what's not, and, you know, how to deal with when these different forms of shading and,
all the advices. Yes.
I'm sorry. up.
Said with love.
I corrected myself. Pieces of advice. So I've said this before, and I really don't think I can say this often enough, but the most practical advice that I can give is the advice that the rabbis gave thousands of years ago, which is the best way to prevent any of this, so that you don't even have to come into the situation where you're worried if the person or thing or whatever it is that you're dealing with is a shade or some form of shade. The best way to prevent it is to do mitzvahs and to learn Torah and to be the best that you can be And so that's my brachas. Everyone's like, you shouldn't even come into the situation where you're worried about this sort of thing. That's the most practical advice I can give. So
head it off at the pass.
Head it off, yeah. Preventative medicine. Hashem gives the cure before the disease. And so one thing that's really important to remember in all of these episodes that we do is you got to stick to what's really the emes. And even when we're the truth, even when we're not sure, things aren't so clear. Some things are clear. And that's the mitzvahs that Hashem gave us. And to be close to Hashem as close as we can at all times. So
do what you can with what you've got, where you are. All right. Sounds like a plan. So with that.
I like Miriam it. Miriam is disappointed.
No, it's great. It's great. It's good stuff. Shade throwers. Thank you so much for spending a little bit of time with us. You matter, and we and the world needs you, and you're awesome. And we'll catch you next time on another edition of Throwing Shade: Better Living Through Jewish Demonology. Catch you all later.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.